Today is Saturday, the 12th April 2025, and it's the 179th session of Mindfulness for Beginners in English Medium, conducted by Nisarnawaneya Forest Monastery. I would first like to welcome Venerable Homagama Dhammakusala Thero to this session. We would also like to welcome everyone who is joining into this session live via Zoom and Facebook live stream, and those who will be watching this later. Our program will commence as usual with the in-session practice of mindfulness meditation guided. Then we will move on to the talk on today's topic. Finally, we will have a Q&A session, and we will take some time to read out the reports that you have submitted. And hopefully we will get the guidance by our Venerable Thero. So to begin this session, I will now invite Bante for the in-session practice of mindfulness.
Thanks, Darindu. Hello, everyone. Today we have a new topic. For this one, I thought of doing an activity. For this, you need a piece of paper and a pen. So if you can quickly gather that and turn on video, we can get started. Okay, it seems like you are ready. So this one, it's an activity related to the topic that we are about to discuss. It's about, you know, being a prisoner of your own mind. And what are we going to do? We are going to do an activity which is related to this topic. And I'll give you a number of scenarios, probably around 10 scenarios, and you have to quickly write your usual response or reaction to such incidents. Clear, right? Number one, two, three. Like that, you have to write your usual way of thinking and usual reaction to these scenarios. Okay, the very first one is, easy, a sick pet? Summary, clear, or you have a question?
It wasn't clear, Swaminath. What was the scenario?
Yes. Okay, right. The very first one is a sick pet.
A sick bed.
Pet, pet.
Sick pet. Okay.
Shall I move on to the second one? Okay, the second one is, you, let's say, decided to go on a trip with your family members and they are running late. Third one, a work project that you are running tight on completion and the due date is approaching. Ready? Okay, number four, a betrayal by a friend. Next one, an unexpected opportunity. Tarindu, you are up to speed?
Yes, sir. I had to switch off the video for something else. I'm here.
Number six, a disagreement with a loved one. Number seven, witness to injustice. Number eight, a financial setback. Number nine, it's a good one for me as well. A public speaking engagement. Number 10, a temptation to break a commitment. All clear? I can go through the list once again. So we have 10 scenarios and we are going to write our usual thought pattern and the reaction to this incident. First one, a sick pet. Second one, you have planned to go on a trip and family members running late. Third one, a tight work project approaching due date. Fourth one, a betrayal by a friend. Fifth one, an unexpected opportunity. Sixth one, a disagreement with a loved one. Seventh, witness to injustice. Eighth, a financial setback. Ninth, a public speaking engagement. Tenth, a temptation to break a commitment. So those are the 10 scenarios. Okay, if you are ready, we can take turns discussing or sharing your usual thought pattern and the reaction. The first one, shall you go one by one? Yeah. The first one, the sick pet. Yes. You might have to allow them to unmute. Yes, Chamar, yes.
I don't have pets. I never had pets. So it's neutral for me. And if I see some animal who's supposed to be a pet in trouble, I'll do if there's something I can do. Otherwise, it's very neutral for me.
Okay. Another one.
Again, Bhante, I haven't had a pet recently, but we used to have pets growing up. We do look after a friend's dog for them when they're on holiday, and in fact, she's here with us at the moment. From my past experience, there is some sadness involved. Sometimes there is guilt, because on reflection, you feel like, oh, maybe I missed something, I could have done better. Maybe we should have intervened earlier. But I think that was more as a child. But now as an adult, I presume, apart from feeling a bit upset and sad, I probably would go into more of a proactive mindset, thinking and planning what to do next, whether we should take the pet to the vet and treat it. That's probably what I would do as an adult.
Yep.
No idea about pets, so I'll definitely take it to a professional. I'll go to the vet straight away. Safest thing.
Okay. Anyone else? I saw a few other. You have to remove the Zoom hand or give a reaction or something like that.
Maybe.
Yeah, really, I'm also a person who hasn't had pets, but I probably would have thought, find out why, and again, whether I need to take it to a vet or is there something I could do.
Okay. Samantha, yes.
Yeah, same with me, Bante. I don't have pets, but I would feel compassion toward the pet illness and take it to a vet, yeah, and seek help.
Yes, okay, right, Hiranti.
Hiranti? You can unmute, yes.
I feel sad when I see even an animal, so I'll try and get some advice if it is, you know, from a friend if they have any pets like that, or else I'll take him to the vet, really, to get him sorted, really.
Okay, right. Anupama, you have something?
Yes, Panthe, this question has taken me back in time. I do remember a particular pet we had. This was in Sri Lanka. And I was a child then. And she was really unwell. And I could hear her breathing really hard, very labored breathing all night from my bedroom. And this is a memory that has stuck with me. I think now, if I was an adult at that point, and if I had the knowledge I have now or experienced, I would have maybe been more proactive. I think the dog had pneumonia, and maybe we didn't initiate the antibiotics soon enough. She eventually passed away. And I think my mother felt a lot of guilt as well. So this question has actually taken me back in time. And I do still carry a bit of that guilt now.
Right. So you can see now most of the group, they are not having pets. So it's easier for you to, you know, do the right thing without getting emotionally involved in it. But when you actually have one, if they are sick, then you might have a totally different reaction. You might cry, break down, those type of things, right? So when we don't have a pet, it's easier for us to, you know, analyze and do the rational thing. But in reality, it would be a different one, right? So that's the first one. We'll quickly go through the others as well. The second one would be family members running late. Yes, Anupama.
This is a very, very common scenario in our household. And I do get very, very frustrated with this. I am aware that I get more impatient and I get easily triggered if we are running late. Because I immediately thinking of the rest of my day, and if the children don't get to school on time, then I get late to work, then I get late to finish my work, and then late to go back and pick the kids, and you know, that whole cycle. And I am very much aware that that is a scenario in which I get short-tempered and impatient, and verbally, I probably, yeah, I shouldn't say some things that I do say, but yeah, it's a common scenario as a mother with a timetable and children that I experience.
Yeah, but that's a good one. Yes. Samar, yes.
Yes, Panthe. If it's a family trip and people are running late, I think initially there would be irritation and the annoyance, but it doesn't last that long anymore. Whatever happens, happens. I will then think about, are they all right? So there's concern coming up in the mind, or are they running late because something's happened? But I'm not that concerned anymore.
Right. Karina must be the person who is running late.
No, obviously scream to the kids so that the wife will hear, but never say a word to your wife. Just go and check with her if she needs any help, and then come back and silently wait.
You are not the person who is usually late.
No, I dress up quickly and I'll quickly come out, because if I hang around, she'll ask me to do this and that. So I'll leave everything behind. And if they're getting late, I'll just scream at the kids so she'll get the message.
Right. Okay. Then Mihiri?
Bante, this question made me smile because in the past, like Anupama, I had the same sort of reactions. But as I have got older now, and I have a lovely husband who is, I would say, 99.9% of the time late, I actually have now developed an enormous amount of patience, especially since I've started doing your program. And I actually take the time to meditate because he takes so long and he's so slow at doing things. I genuinely take that time. I just go, I say, I'm in the car now, wait for you. Sometimes 10 minutes, 15 minutes, I can do quite a lot of patient waiting. So, and it was interesting because the other day, for once, I was late, which is very unusual. And he said, what do you think? How can you be late? It's ridiculous. I've been waiting for 4 minutes or 5 minutes. And I thought, my goodness. I said, now you see how I feel 100 times. Anyway, there we are, Bante. So that's me.
Right. So that's a good one. He tasted the bitter medicine. Yes, right, so you get the idea. So here, if you are ready or on time, then you get frustration, anger, and you might scream at them. That's the natural behavior. But let's say if you are in the receiving end, the other end, then you might be having a totally different reaction, right? So as Neil mentioned, this could be the meditation time. You can meditate on your patience and, you know, wait and see how we can manage such a situation, right? So these are simple matters, daily encounters, but still, sometimes we have extreme reactions for such incidents. So we can see, depending on our experience, depending on the end we are in, we have certain reactions. The very idea of this session is to discuss and see that there are other reactions than our compulsive way of reacting or thinking. Right? Usually we have this compulsive way of reacting and thinking, but if you keep an open mind, there are so many other options available to you as well, right? So Mihiri's one is a good one. The 99% 9-point late husband, one day you were late. And that reaction is hilarious, right? So you can see that one. Then the third one, a work project. Running date and due date is approaching. Anyone?
Is it the third one now, Bante?
Yes, Tamari.
Yeah, is it the work deadline?
Yes, yes.
Yeah. It's very interesting, these questions. Now, how it used to be a few years ago and now, it's very different. I tend to have an energy cushion, like time. In my diary, I don't feel it fully. It used to be too many things at some point, but work deadlines don't really agitate me. I have some reports to write for insurance companies about clients. Once in a while, they are the things that I take as my deadlines. I just do it. There's a day set in the week for admin. So Wednesday is my admin day. Everything, all the deadlines go in there. So again, if I manage to keep the deadline, well and good. If not, whatever the outcome is the best one.
Right, so basically you have a cushion. Yes, Anupama?
Deadlines, I have to be honest, yes, can be stressful. I think it really depends on my workload at that point in time. If I have more than one deadline going on at the same time, then yes, the stress levels are more. I do note that my patience probably runs thin when that kind of stress builds up, but I'm very well, I try and be aware of that. Yeah, sometimes I have to be honest, I don't enjoy some of the deadlines, but some, yes, it may be to do with something that I enjoy doing, then that's not so much. So, you know, that aversion factor sometimes comes in as well, Bhante.
I'm quite the opposite, so I will wait till the deadline comes, and then that's how I get motivated and then put all my, you know, time and effort into it, you know, the last hurrah, and then I'll finish it. Obviously, if it is getting out of hand, I'll seek help. That's how I deal with deadlines.
Right, so that's his way of, you know, he needs the deadline to be motivated. Yeah, I kind of have the same type of experience, you know, whatever that I'm approaching. Usually I will wait till the last minute and then only get the motivation to do. But my lifestyle is a different one, no? Right, so anyway, yes, Neeri?
I'm the opposite of Tharindra. I get anxious if I don't do things well ahead of time. And I'm one of those plodders, so I feel I have to do things slowly. And I do it well in advance. So really, if there's a deadline to meet, everybody laughs at me because they say, oh, if I have to go somewhere, I have to be there, I have to be early. If I'm my poor husband, he has a heart attack because he's like you guys, like that in the last moment. So it's very interesting. Yes, so I get anxious if I have to wait till the last moment to do beat deadlines. I mean, now I'm not working, so I don't have that problem that much. But when I used to, I still used to do things well in advance. It's a very boring person.
Right, so you can see that he needs the deadline for his motivation. Maybe she gets anxious approaching deadlines, right? So this scenario came to my mind because I know a person who is going crazy with a deadline these days and, you know, panicking and, you know, out of the world, kind of panicking, right? And being anxious and all those things. But there are other ways of, you know, facing such a situation. Of course, work matters, you have to do it in a timely manner and do it properly. All those things are there. But still, apart from our programmed reaction, there are other ways to face such a situation. That's the basic whole idea of this exercise. Then another one, a betrayal by a friend.
Yeah, Bhante, I had this and I've written reports about it as well last year. It was difficult, but I'm wondering whether it will be as difficult now, having kind of processed it and understood why people do what they do. And I can check. It's hard, but I think I can also check what led to it and what my contribution to that betrayal may have been. So it needs to happen again, maybe to know how I'm going to respond or react this time. Yeah.
Anyone else? Yes, Anubhav.
Interestingly, Bhante, this is one thing I think I felt more neutral about compared to the other scenarios. I mean, I have friends who are very different in personality and character. And I think over time I've learned to expect, I don't know, I somehow feel like I'm more open-minded and I have less expectations when it comes to my friends. And if there is a betrayal, I'll probably reflect on it and try and understand why it happened, and maybe my role in it. But I feel like I will be more understanding and a bit more open-minded about it somehow, I feel, in this scenario. But I suppose it really has to happen for me to truly understand.
Yeah.
So, I'll first go silent. And I'll try to gather as much as information as possible and try to understand, like, why? Why, what's the reason? Like, why he or she did that? And I'll remain silent, and I'm not that innocent, so I'll find ways to get back at them. So maybe creative ways, you know, I'll get more closer to them so that they'll feel guilty. So that's my honest feedback. But now I've found, like, I'm not that reactive. So whenever I feel something, I'll write it somewhere. Obviously, I use Facebook as a good tool to hurt others, but now I will write it, keep it as a draft, come back the next day, read it, and then I'll just delete it.
Yes. Right. So that's a good one. Yes, maybe. Yes.
Yeah, I think I probably will be sad and disappointed, but not surprised. And I think I would say things like, things change all the time, like people and situations. And I think I'll be sad. I mean, I probably would be sad if I felt somebody had betrayed, but I think I would be much more accepting than in the past of situations like that.
Okay, right. So thinking about this one, me personally, in the history, I have some hard time accepting these such things, especially when it comes to the close one. But nowadays, no idea because of the lifestyle change, I guess. This lifestyle, it encourages us to, you know, stay at a distance from everybody. But not sure I have to go through such an experience in order to realize what is my current reaction would be, right? So it's good that Anupama's reaction, it's a good one, that you can be more neutral and open-minded towards such things. Because, you know, when you live a life, these things are very common. They happen a lot, happen frequently. Right? So that's a good one. How are we with time? We have 6 more to go. Tarindu, what do you say?
It's a fun activity, so I don't want to stop it also, but Swaminas can suggest what's best, so.
Yeah, a disagreement with a loud one, number 6, that is.
Number 6.
Can I go, Pante?
Yeah.
So disagreement with loved one, I chose my husband. So yeah, it used to be really conflicting many, many years ago. Now it's like I still do this sarcastic comment or something like that. That's the reaction, that's the reflex for me. Then soon after, as I'm in it, I realized, my God, what are you doing? This is not the answer. So it's, yeah, after the cutting comment or something like that, the sarcastic, then I go back to, oh, it's not about what's happening. There's a person in front of me and they're my partner. So it all fizzles out, but still that reflex happens. I don't know what to do with it. I think over time it will get better. But that's how it is.
Yeah. So it's good at least, you know, you can let go of it within a couple of days. Especially when it comes to women, sometimes they carry it for like a few months, right? So, yes, so Anupama, yes.
Interesting, Ivante. I think if I have a disagreement, say, for example, with my husband, I think I will feel upset. The reason I say that is, to be honest, we don't, we see eye to eye quite a lot of the time. And when it comes to each other, we are not very reactive. And, you know, if there is a disagreement, then I probably will think, oh, something's really gone amiss here, and I'll probably feel a bit guilty, but we tend to reflect, both of us tend to reflect, we'll probably reflect and see what our part was in it. So that's probably what will happen.
Right.
It's kind of a question that will get you into trouble, but you know, speaking on behalf of all the husbands out there, I think the best way, if you're having a disagreement with your wife, you know, your wife is always right. So that's the golden rule. So remain silent, wait for the opportunity, and take your time, and I'll go silently to prove the point. I will not be, you know, do it then and there, because that's suicide. So that's what I'll do. Let her have the win, let her win the battle, but I'll win the war eventually.
Of course, that's the proper way of doing it, the logical answer, but can you do it? That's the question.
Yeah, some battles, I think, yeah. It's
yes.
Like dragging on for years, or some I have given up, no point.
Right. Anyone else? No, it seems.
I'll say something. I'm afraid my reflex reaction sometimes is to shout or get irritated. But again, like Chamari, I quickly realize as I'm almost, it's coming out, I'm like, oh no, here we go again. So I managed to curtail it quite quickly nowadays compared to in the past. It would have gone on a lot. Other times when I'm actually, which is much more than before, I do just go quiet and recognize that he can't help what he's saying, and it's just some thought that has come into his head, and this is, you know, then I try to think of it in a kind of a Buddhist Dhamma kind of a way, you know, resulting in my own karma. This is a sound, and so on. I try to kind of keep that, you know, see it from the ultimate truth type point of view, and then reflect on it like that. And that takes away the annoyance or the anger immediately. So, but my reflex reaction is shout.
Right, yes. Being conscious of it, it helps. Right. Then I thought of selecting the one witness to injustice. So that's a good one. Yes.
Yeah, this is a good one. I think definitely a difference in before and now. Before, I would have been up in arms just trying to change the world. I'm now much more of a observer, even if it is injustice to me. When I have discussions with my Dhamma friends, I realize it's very different how I used to really react to put things right, either for me or for the others. It's not there that much. I understand things are like this in the world, and people do whatever they do based on how they're thinking. So I think I'm getting to more of a neutral place quicker. Much quicker than before.
Right. Anyone else?
Bante, I have to be honest, this is a topic that can be quite triggering for me personally. So even if the injustice may not directly involve me, I still feel some responsibility to bring awareness on behalf of the marginalized or parties or people who have experienced injustice. I feel like, for example, I inherently understand the world is not a fair place, and to expect that is unrealistic. But I feel like we need to continue to make changes to make it as fair as possible for others. So yes, this is I have to sometimes remove myself from reading certain posts or social media, etc., because I understand it really causes turbulence in my head. So yes.
So you are a fighter, yes.
Yeah. For me, Swaminanda, yeah, totally different from who I was before. Like, I would have gone all guns out a few years back, but now I've accepted it as a part of life. Injustice is everywhere. And what I think justice might not be justice for someone else. So it's a perspective thing, I think. So I'll just keep quiet and, you know, have them their day or something. So that's how I will go about it.
Right.
Yeah, I'm a bit like Anupama. I also feel if there's something that can be done, then I would try to do it because, you know, peacefully. And if there is nothing you can do, like big world situations, and, you know, I recognize this is the way the world is, and we all have to go through a karma kind of a feeling, and then I just try to accept it in a relatively neutral way. But I do feel a lot for the underprivileged, the people without the voices. And so I do try to do what I can in small ways. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. So this one, me personally, if I think about it, since childhood, I had this ability to silently observe. And sometimes, although I perceive it in my mind as wrong, I want to speak up. But as you mentioned, we need fighters as well, right? Otherwise, it's a new for the society. So people who speak up, people who fight, they too are needed in this society. But in our mind, It's an ability that you can, you know, silently observe some injustice and without, you know, interfering. That's an ability. If you have that ability, then of course you can sometimes interfere, sometimes stay mute. I don't know. But anyway, the whole idea of this exercise is to see there are so many different possibilities. In a certain scenario, we are usually programmed to do or react in a compulsive manner. But if we can, you know, try the opposite for a change, that would be a very nice experiment with the meditation and with the mind. Right? So that's something. Then final one, I will take this one. That too is a good one. A temptation to break our commitment.
Yeah, well, happens rarely. I mean, throughout my life, it's happened rarely. I don't commit easily. Once I commit, I'm there for the whole ride until death. So it's rare. So it's, again, a neutral one for me. It has to be something really big for me to break a commitment. Maybe time pressures or situation has totally changed. And then reworking, maybe negotiating, but it's rare that I knowingly break the commitment.
Yeah. Anybody, yes.
Um, I suppose it depends on the commitment that I am contemplating on breaking. Maybe there will be guilt involved. But I think also sometimes maybe frustration and anger, because sometimes we are bound by, maybe obligation. When I think there's sometimes we take on obligations, we should have the ability to say no and not commit if we feel like we haven't. But it's something I'm getting better at, I suppose, like boundaries at work, not committing to things that I won't be able to meet. So yes, there's probably a combination of guilt, frustration, maybe even anger sometimes is what I think.
Yes.
Well, for me, I'm like one of the worst kinds. If I get commit, like if I commit to something, I will never be able to say no. So even though I hate it, I'll just still continue it. But I'll try my best to convince the other party. So at least they'll say, okay, that's enough. You can stop now. So I'm like that. So I've started things, and then I'm still continuing up to date some things. But you know, inside I can't commit. I know, but I will still do it.
Right. Maybe anything wrong?
No, I think I'm quite. I have learned as I got older not to commit myself to things I can't really go ahead with. So I've got better at saying no, and I think I can so empathize with Anupama's situation work-wise. Well, you have to. I think we were both in the same world, so it was very, yes, it's difficult sometimes to say no in those situations, but yeah, with experience and time, it's a good thing to kind of just learn to say no, and I have definitely reduced the amount of commitments I try to make, so that actually breaking them, it doesn't come into it really. I take on what I can handle kind of feeling.
Right. So that one, when I reflect my personal experience, I used to, you know, commit rarely, but once committed, you know, I'll do it somehow. That was the earlier person, but this whole going forward process ruined it for me. Now, still I know I have those, you know, kind of qualities, but now I'm not too serious about it. Sometimes, due to certain circumstances, I commit. And sometimes, due to certain circumstances, I can't keep that commitment. Right? So, always things change. According to earlier things I committed, and according to now, myself, the current things, I can't make it. Right? So, now I feel like I don't take them too seriously. And probably I have the luxury of this new lifestyle to do it. But I remember I used to be a person who commit rarely, but once committed, I will somehow do it. So this too is a good one. Yes, commitments. Right, so I think we covered around 6 or 7 out of the 10. Unfortunately, due to the time limit, we have to skip few. But you get the idea. So these are different experiences that we have in life, and we have a certain compulsive way of reacting and thinking about them. Right? But what we suggest as the practice is to try something new. For example, you know, living with a husband who is always there, you get to work for a change. Right? That seems like, you know, something, the punishment doesn't think like that. But, you know, it's an experiment. New ways of thinking, new ways of working. Like, instead of being in the same thought processes, or instead of being stuck in the same emotions. Right? So, this compulsive way of thinking and reacting is the killer. That's the ball and chain. right? But if we can go beyond that, then there are so many other possibilities as well. For example, let's say you are a person who keeps a commitment once committed. But once in a while, you can do the opposite and see. It might look bad on you, reflect bad on you when it comes to others. But in a way, it's an experiment. So that we can call it the noble experiment, I guess. Right? So that's the idea. I think that's enough for today.
Thank you very much, Vanti, for that wonderful activity. And with that, I think we are moving on to today's topic. And I would like to invite Bhante once again to explain us the topic.
Right. If you have the pause, you can just.
Yeah, I was like about.
Okay, well, so today we have a fresh topic, and this is a good one, which is, it's about, you know, being a prisoner of your own mind. Now, when it comes to this idea, I think it was Gorodok. He mentioned that you are in prison. You are in prison. Right? So that was his initial way of explaining it. But when he goes deeper into it, he will say that you are the prison. Instead of saying that you are in prison, he would say that you are the prison. Right? So that's the very idea that we have for today's topic. The court says you are the inmate and the guard of the prison in which you are confined. Right? So if you can maintain such a prison, then of course there won't be any prison break. Because the very person who is the inmate, he is the very guard of that prison, right? So what's the idea behind this? It's about our thoughts and emotions, being a prisoner of our own thoughts, being a prisoner of our own emotions. Although you feel this sense of freedom in your life, you are not really free. We all are bound by our own thoughts. We all are bound by our own emotions. That you can't initially feel it, but the practitioners, they get to experience this idea. Now, let's say, usually our minds, they are full of thoughts, right? That this continuous buzzing goes on in your mind 24/7. Thoughts, it's full of thoughts, right? That there's so much noise in it. And there's this old proverb that says, talking to yourself is the first sign of madness. Why this talking to oneself happens? It's because the mind is full of thoughts. It's buzzing 24/7, continuously it's buzzing, full of thoughts, right? So it's important that we at least for a short period experience a mind without thought. For a commoner, it's not easy. If you go to a person, let's say who is working, who is, you know, doing all these responsibilities, the worldly responsibilities, if you tell them to experience a mind without thought, it's a hell of an exercise for them. It's not easy, right? But let's say the practitioners, little by little, they start to experience a mind without thought. That is very important. If you really want to go beyond these thoughts, emotions, if you want to become free from this prison, then first, as a stepping stone, you have to experience a mind without thought. That would be kind of a stepping stone, right? Otherwise, we are always bounded by thought. There's so much buzz, there's so much noise in your mind, you can't really feel anything else. That's why talking to oneself happens. So it's full of thoughts, then you know you start talking to yourself. Right? So this experience in the mind without thought is very important in this practice. Let's say a couple of days ago, I went to a school and probably a kid around 12 years old. She was around, I guess, 12 years. And, you know, she was explaining her mindful experience. She said that Bhante, I could watch 2-3 breaths. I could take 2-3 breaths mindfully. Then suddenly, the fourth breath was there out in the next classroom. The classroom that was next to me, it was so noisy, and my breath was there in the other classroom. Then I asked her, was it the breath that went to the other classroom? Then again she confirmed, yes, the my breath was there in the other classroom. My breath wasn't with me, it was there in the other classroom. Right? So that's a very nice way of explaining from a child about the behavior of this mind. Although theoretically we know that the body is breathing, right? From the birth till you die, the body breathes. During day and night, it breathes. That's the theory. But is it really breathing? That's a question that you have to ask, right? If you do you really have the breath with you? Probably not. Your mind is in the next classroom, the other classroom. Your mind is with the other person. Your mind is with some other place, probably workplace. You know, that's how the mind works. It's continuously buzzing with the thoughts, emotion. And you don't have the breath. And when you work, you have the steps. Although theoretically you would say that the steps are there, but do you really have them? Probably not. Our steps are with the other person, or the scenery that we see, or a family problem, that's where our steps are. Right? So they are not really with me when you work. Same goes for that. Whatever the other activities that you do, while doing them, are you really present with that activity? Probably not. You're like a zombie who works, but your attention is somewhere else. So this is the natural behavior of this mind. And this mind is the mind that will create this very prison. And in that prison, you are the inmate, and you are the guard. That's the funny thing. You will be the one protecting this very prison. There, you are confined. Right? So, in this practice, we encourage you to first experience a mind without thought. At least for a while. Let's say if you are able to stay with the breath for a while, let's say if you are able to stay and observe 15, 20 breaths or so, and do the same thing over and over again, then you start to feel a certain light-minded experience. A child was explaining this. I sat for 10 minutes and I could feel that the calm is increasing in me. The calm is filling in me. Right? So if you stay with your breath for a while, then you can see some kind of a light-minded kind of experience comes. A calm appears. And that's a good way of developing a mind without thought. And when you experience the breath again and again, gradually you start to feel how the breath is changing. That experience is common for a practitioner who has done few hours, few days of practice, and you can really feel how the breath is changing. And let's say the breath changes and disappears suddenly. It becomes lighter and lighter, the breath becomes lighter and lighter, disappears suddenly. And that very experience will be a whole new one. When the breath disappears, you can probably for the first time in your life, you start to experience a mind without thought. That experience is life-changing. Some people think that they have attained nirvana. Well, just because of experiencing a mind without thought. Some people feel that they can control the outside world. It's under your control. That type of a high or euphoria that people feel. Right? But this is the very mind that you are experiencing. This is the very mind without thought. Maybe for the very first time of your life, you are experiencing a mind without thought. Right? So that's a good stepping stone for this practice. Forget about going beyond this person, at least you have to experience what it would be feel like to be free from this person. At least you know that there is a free world out there. That's important. Otherwise you think that your very reality is the only reality. You think that this person is the entire world. That's how you feel. Even in that movie Matrix, of course it was 1996, I guess, so many years has passed, but still we are talking about it. In that movie, that some people, the reality was too boring, they decided to go back into the illusion. Their complaint was they were saying that the reality was too boring. They preferred the illusion instead of the reality. Right? So that type of a mentality we have, that type of a mind we are dealing with. So it's not easy for us to continue this practice and experience that there is a world, there's a free world, there is a world without thought. That experience, it's not easy to become familiar with it. It's not easy to do so many hours of practice in order to experience it. But that way, little by little, if you develop your practice, you start to experience at least that there is a world beyond this prison. Right? So that's important. That's important. Little by little, if you can really continue this practice, the potential will develop for you to go beyond the present, go beyond one's thoughts, go beyond one's emotion. It's a gradual process, but that is doable. First, you have to experience a mind without thought. Not for a long time, maybe every day for 30, 40 minutes. Try to experience this. Try to continue the sitting practice. Daily for a short while, 30, 40 minutes. you try to experience a mind without thought. Sometimes the thought comes, sometimes they are like chain thoughts, sometimes they are like pain thoughts, but that's okay. You simply know them as thoughts. Be conscious that there are chain thoughts or train thoughts. Simply let them pass according to their natural course. But also this way, becoming mindful daily during a formal practice is important. The foundation should be there in your lives. Daily for problem needs, you simply sit, you simply try to become mindful. And that very practice develop little by little, will allow you to go beyond this prison. That potential will be developed in you, but it can't be done overnight. Even today, there was this person, it's a government holiday in Sri Lanka, so there are like a lot of people in the front office who is meditating, who are meditating, and you know, except for Sri Lanka and everything. So one person came to me and, you know, was asking, "Bante, I have a problem. What is the problem?" He says, "I'm going to anger all the time. I have to find a solution for that." So I told him, "It's of course you can find a solution, but this is not the way to find a solution. A topic like anger, we can't really discuss within 2 minutes. Instead, what you have to do is you have to revisit. You have to revisit the practice. You have to revisit this discussion. You have to revisit the place. That way, you have to revisit again and again. Revisit the practice every day for like 30, 40 minutes. Revisit and discuss your meditation experience. Revisit and listen to the teachings. That way, revisit for a few months, few years, then we can really talk about a topic like anger. Otherwise, they think that we have a solution, we are not giving it. That's not the case. We have a solution, but it's not easy to give like that. You can give it like an anti-vaccine. That's not possible. Right? So you have to little by little gradually develop the practice, revisit your meditation every day, revisit and discuss your meditation experience, revisit and listen to Dharma. That will continue for a few months, few years. Then you can really see how you have evolved. Even in today's discussion, some of you were mentioning that you have to come to the earlier me versus the current me. Earlier me used to react in this manner. Current me is not reacting in that way. Right? So there is evolution. There is change that has happened. But that change won't happen overnight. That's not possible. And so gradually, for many painstaking hours, we have practiced. We have continued to revisit this discussion. We have continued to revisit the Dhamma talk. And little by little, we have developed your practice. And as a result, you experience that you are able to go beyond these thoughts and emotions. At least you have partially gone beyond. Not fully, but still we feel that they are not so controlling as they used to be. They don't have so much power as they used to be. Right? So that very experience you can do the practice works. But you can't do it overnight. You can't give it within 2 minutes of discussion. That's not possible. We have to earn it. We have to revisit those practice hours. We have to revisit and discuss. We have to revisit and listen to these things. That way, gradually, if you continue for a while, then little by little, you see that you are going beyond this prison. So that's the idea I would give for today. Next time, we can discuss UNICEF into the topic. I think it was worth it to do that activity first. So let's start with this one.
Well, I'd like to thank Venerable Thero for this wonderful explanation. And with that, we are moving on to the next segment of our program. Next, we have the Q&A session, and we also take some time to read out the reports. So I would like to invite Anupama to conduct the session. I hope you have enough time, Anupama.
Yes, I think I should be fine, hopefully. If not, Chamar is on standby, so thank you for that. I hope everyone can hear me clearly. We now move on to the segment where we recap or we introduce to everyone the method of practice and submitting reports. As I'm going to read one in a minute. Most of you are familiar with the process, but for those of you who are not, Tarindu hopefully will post the links in the chat and share the screen when he has a minute. You go to the Nisarana Vanil website resources and look at the mindfulness videos for walk eating. You follow the instructions and then practice, preferably on a daily basis. Maybe start off with 10-20 minutes of mindful walking, mindful standing, and then write your reports and send it to us. There will be a link on the screen shared, either via Google Form or email. You can submit it. Because we are short of time, I won't elaborate on point number 3 about writing down your experience or reflection report, but you can see the information on the screen in front of you and on the chat in a minute. So once the reports are submitted, we will be reading it out at sessions like this. And today we have received one report, which I am going to read now. Theruvan Saranai Bante. Nothing popping out to write regarding Sakmana and Pariyankaya. Feel like getting closer to far happening things and reporting them as below. Have to live with the family till I get a new place after living more time alone. Adapted as much as possible. Via the tiredness, come to know when it's stuck in somewhere. Then the attention on my side as to what is the resistance to other one's actions. Sometimes it is also tiring, letting go. Listening to the body has been followed with health issues and feeling good at having body can digest easily. More talking also leads to tiredness and conversations. The family doesn't like these ways of mine. From time to time, they reveal it via jokes. Notice that in such situations, not going for sudden reactions. It responds, but it still blurs the mode. The reason behind that is there is a tendency or habit of making others, the family used to feel fine by bringing the other one down. So it arose as attraction happens as I carry reason for that is taking things personally. From time to time, an urge arises to leave the place. It feels like living with mask, pretending to be nice at the same time. It feels as they are trying to use the situation to their advantage, knowing those still stay like I don't know. Even found the two places that it arose as the patient, as be patient enough to learn the lesson fully. Another thing is, before the practice, went through many breakdowns in life. And at that time, the feeling of I am not enough. Suicidal thoughts faded from time to time. It was seen with the guidance of Bantes and practice. I was able to come out of it. Those thoughts are rare nowadays and a blur. Notice that this kind of situation arises even in a blur. Have to go through criticism and judgment of others as if I'm of no use. A few years ago, I took medicine for OCD. Still, there is a habit of urge to wash hands, and it is tiring sometimes. Notice there was an urge, as no need to share all of these. Anyhow, the reason for sharing was to help the journey. Thank you for the guidance. Teruan Saranai Bhante. End of the report.
Okay, right. So I have to mention the reason for sharing is for the sake of the practice. Right? So sharing about it and talking about it helps a lot. Like we all have gone through such experiences like that. And the people, the behavior of these people, and the life experience of it's like, you know, it's like a face to face encounter with the reality. As children, we collect that we become beautiful love. In a way, it's beautiful. But in other ways, we get to experience, we get to encounter the reality of this world. How the people we know, and the kind of living we want, the family members, the other ones who are making jobs, or the other ones who decide at them. Okay? And the experiences, the things that we have wished for, the people, they all tell us something. It's like, you know, they difficult, but we all encounter the reality of this love. The same thing happened to Buddha as well. He lived 29 years in London, and suddenly he came across this reality. This reality of this life that changed him, that made him weep for the truth. Right? So even in our lives, if we didn't have these experiences, we might be living in a comfortable bubble. But due to these experiences, due to this bubble, I'm sure.
Swaminath, really sorry to disturb you, but your voice is getting a bit distorted, so we cannot hear you right.
How is it now?
A bit distant, but clear.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. It's on the show. It's really well. I'm just trying to know. Can you hear me? There's a question mark on your face.
No, I'm really sorry, yeah, but still it's not good for me. But I'd like to ask from someone else in the audience to comment. If it is clear, I don't know whether the problem is on my end. Anupama, can you hear it?
No, it's not clear.
Thank you.
Hope we have a chance for...
I think it's not clear for everyone, Swami Nahal, sir.
How about now?
Ah, yeah.
Better?
Better yes. Than before, yes.
Thank you. Didn't catch anything earlier even. I couldn't hear anything. It was very, very disturbed. Even the
now it works, right?
Yeah, now it's better, Bhante.
Yep. All the sound systems fail and the laptop sounds to save the day. That's the final resort. Yes. So anyway, these very experiences, although they are dark, although they are painful, these very experiences, they lead us towards the reality or towards seeking Dhamma,
right? So all these experiences, whether it's suicidal thoughts or OCD or family members joking, sarcasm, all these things, that's the reality of life. And due to these experiences, we are practitioners, right? So you can be motivated that due to all these experiences, you have become a practitioner. And by practicing for many days, many hours, you have gone beyond much of these suicidal thoughts and even these OCD trends. You are conscious, right? They happen once in a while. Little things are there, but you are conscious. You don't have to get rid of it. Simply be conscious that this is happening, right? Obsession to watch hands, let's say. That simply be conscious. Simply see the troubles it is giving you. Simply see this compulsive thought process. And simply see how the obsession is created. Right? So I don't think that there are people without these trends. All of us have certain trends like that. That was so prominent during that pandemic time, right? Usually when we talk, when we do, we touch the face a lot. But during that pandemic time, due to the COVID, that it became this compulsive thing, right? It becomes this life or death situation. And that has driven many people into so many compulsive thoughts, obsessions, and they already had those trends, but due to the virus or the pandemic, it became prominent. So I assure you, all of us, we have certain such trends in our lives, right? What can we do? We can simply be conscious. Now, during that pandemic time, we were conscious of how many times we touched the face. It happens automatically, but at least we were conscious that this is happening, right? So that way, simply be conscious. Be conscious. Simply continue in this process. And I assure you, gradually, little by little, you become much better at these things. Even dealing with your family members, relatives, you know, it's like they make jokes, they play the sarcasm. Even one of the Satipasana children, I remember, they were saying that, you know, the family members, they are waiting to find faults. Why? You are a mindful practitioner, you are a meditator, and you can't make these faults. As soon as that person makes a mistake, they will make this sarcastic comment, saying that you are a meditator and you make these mistakes. You are a meditator, you behave this way. You are a meditator, you are greedy. You are a meditator, you get angry. Right? All those jokes, sarcastic comments, they come from the family members, not from the strangers. That's the reality of this world, right? That's how the people are. So simply accept it. Simply know that this is the reality. And little by little, you are able to distance yourself. Emotionally distance yourself. You can distance your mind from these experiences, from these people. They'll be still there in your life or in your home, but you are distant from them. It's like you are a person from Mars. So what's the issue? Right? All these earthly people, they die and be reborn, and you become enlightened. That's the very idea. So it's natural that we become a black sheep in the process of this practice. The worldly norms, they don't agree with your mind. Sometimes you follow them just to keep the social contract. But you don't really appreciate or you don't really agree with those norms. You simply know that these are norms and you simply continue. So in a way, we become black sheep in this practice. The world doesn't agree with us. But that's the very process of this meditation. The earthly people, they die and be reborn, go through this whole process again and again with unbearable pain and suffering. While the people from Mars, or the practitioners or the black sheep, they become free from this process. Right? So continue, share the experience again and again. That way, as a community, we can progress in our practice. Thanks for sharing.
Thank you, Bhante. I think that's the only report we have for the day. I'd like to give a few minutes for our participants. If you have anything to share with Bhante, now's the time. You can raise your hand and then we'll give you the chance to present it to Swaminas. Okay, I don't think we have any more questions for Bhante. With that, we can end the session for the day. Swaminas, I seek your permission to finish.
Yeah, okay, right.
All right. Okay, thank you everyone. Thank you everyone who shared their reports and who took part. And of course, for Bhante's guidance. On behalf of the organization, I would like to thank once again to Oma Gamadamu Kusalatero for his continued guidance on this program. And cannot forget the Chief Abbot of Nisarnawane, who initiated this program, and Odire Gamadamu Jiva Mahathero. May these merits help them in improving their own practice as well. A big thank you to all the organizers who are maintaining and managing this program. And much merits to everyone who took part and here today with us on Zoom and joining with us via Facebook Live as well. As usual, we will meet once again next week, same time. So I would like to end the session wishing you a mindful week ahead. Thank you very much.